Rocket, but it spun out of control and broke apart, falling back to Earth shortly after liftoff. President Trump set to pardon reality TV stars Todd and Julie Chrisley, who were sentenced to years in prison for defrauding banks out of tens of millions of dollars. A big change to CDC guidelines created during the pandemic. ABC senior Washington correspondent Rachel Scott with more.
Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is a noted vaccine skeptic, announced on social media that the CDC will no longer be recommending COVID-19 vaccines for healthy children or healthy pregnant women. Now, this catching doctors off guard because it did bypass the traditional CDC process that includes an independent review and also consulting with medical professionals.
Macy's department stores and says profits slipped in the first quarter and says more customers are cautious about the trade war. This is ABC News. There was a big rally on Tuesday at Harvard University as students and faculty spoke out about President Trump's actions, pulling millions in federal funding from the Ivy League school, and the move preventing Harvard from recruiting international students. The White House claims anti-Semitism is the reason why. Jewish student Jacob Miller, though, president of the Harvard Hillel organization, says that's a false narrative.
The administration's excuse for these policies that they somehow address anti-Semitism are so absurd. Let's be clear, this has nothing to do with combating anti-Semitism.
The Department of Homeland Security is demanding access to records of all foreign students at Harvard. A judge ruled late last night that a team from DOGE can now access a sensitive Treasury Department system that controls trillions of dollars in federal payments. It's a win for the Trump administration after a group of Democratic attorneys general sued to block access to the database. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Good morning. This is Pamela at Pamela's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Spring Green. Hoping everyone has a safe Memorial weekend with family and friends. Stop in at Pamela's for emeralds are on sale and an awesome time for a graduation gift at Pamela's in beautiful downtown Spring Green.
The Phoenix Center has made lunch easy and delicious. Now open Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., they serve a full menu with a strong focus on lunch favorites. Think burgers, salads, wraps, sandwiches, and signature appetizers. Sundays are now closed, but weekdays offer a convenient way to break up the day. Whether it's a quick bite or dinner with the family, the Phoenix Center delivers even to go. Call 649-7469 for carryout. And don't miss their famous pizza, a local favorite in Richland Center.
WRCO Hometown Weather Watch is sponsored by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765 and learn how to buy a home without needing 20% down.
Today, periods of rain and a high of 64. Northeast to north winds at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Showers diminish tonight, a low of 50. Thursday, partly sunny and warmer. A stray afternoon shower or thunderstorm is possible, a high of 73. Thursday night, isolated showers early and a low of 51. Friday, partly cloudy and warmer. Isolated afternoon showers or thunderstorms and a high of 80 and 78 with a slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm Saturday afternoon.
This is Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service in Richland Center in Muscadet. We stand ready to help you in planning a final farewell to your loved one that is healing and meaningful. The days following a loss are never easy, but we can all find comfort in knowing we are not alone. A funeral and visitation are a positive contribution to the grieving process, providing a formal time to reflect, love, forgive, and find comfort in our loss.
The Memorial Day sale is happening now at Furniture, Decor, and More. Save up to 30% on brands like Flexsteel, Coaster, Ashley, Englander, and many more. Now through June 1st. Don't miss it. Memorial Day sale at Furniture, Decor, and More. Boscobel and Westby. The Memorial Day sale is happening now at Furniture, Decor, and More. Save up to 30% on brands like Flexsteel, Coaster, Ashley, Englander, and many more. Now through June 1st. Don't miss it. Memorial Day sale at Furniture, Decor, and More. Boscobel and Westby.
Wilkinson Auctions is proud to present our Classic Tractor Consignment Auction Friday, June 20th at the Muscadet Auction Yard. We expect a nice lineup of collector tractors, including Internationals, Farmalls, John Deere's, Alice Chalmers, and tons more. We'll also have antique implements, tools, and tons of Ford memorabilia. We're taking consignments. Get your classic tractors and implements down to Muscadet today. Wilkinson Auctions Classic Tractor Consignment Auction Friday, June 20th at the Muscadet Auction Yard. More info at WilkinsonAuctions.com.
The Morning Show on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com, featuring real community conversations that matter to our community. The WRCO Morning Show studio is proudly sponsored by Richland Hospital, caring for the health of our community. Scott Industries, enjoy building strong futures. Osborne Stump Removal, clearing the way for what's next. And Sean's Auto Repair, keeping you on the road with service you can trust. On this part of the morning show today, we welcome back Mike Brenninger to the studio. Local pastor, community leader, author. You've been filling up the resume.
Busy
guy. But we're back to talk about the book, the handbook for community change called Pulling Together, which Mike was on with us a while back. But you're really starting to kind of put things into motion right now with the book. And you have a launch coming up in the community very soon, Mike.
Yes. So Tom Moskaller from Madison and I wrote this book, Pulling Together, a handbook for community change. It took us 3 years to put this book together. We actually had a team that worked with us. But, you know, the more people you've got, kind of the slower things go. So 3 years in the making, but we finally got it launched in 2025. And I was on a couple months ago and talked about it a little bit. So just a little update since then, we've done several book launch events as well as some workshops. So we were, Tom lives in Verona. He's been in Madison for many years. He worked under four Madison mayors in their, you know, their office. So he's well connected in Madison and in the state of Wisconsin. So we had one event on the east side of Madison, one on the west side of Madison, one in Verona. We've been in Viroqua. We've been in the Farmers Union in Wisconsin. We spoke there. And those were all book launch events. So they're about an hour and a half where we kind of explain what the book is about and gather people together. We have little exercises or activations for them to go through. But we've also been on the road doing some workshops. So the workshops are, for example, we did one up in Green Bay. And they called together organizational leaders from Green Bay, Ashwaubenon, De Pere, Denmark, all the communities around Green Bay. And we did about a 4 or 5 hour workshop there where we went over the principles of the book, how you apply those, how that would work in their own organizations. You know, there was a little over 100 people, I think maybe 50 organizations there, different organizations that came and learned the principles. And so that just went over amazingly well. In fact, they started recommending us out to UW Extension, which we're going to do a workshop for UW Extension. And then there's another organization in Wausau that we'll be going to another month or so. So things have kind of started to take off. I'm happy to say, because I like to see the information in the book get out. On the other hand, it makes me more busy to have to travel to these places, especially when it's, you know, Green Bay is 3 hours away each, or at least 3 hours away each way. And so lots of activity on the road. At the Green Bay event, the organizing entity that brought us in actually said that they'd give grants to any organization that put these principles into practice. And they had to apply for the grants. And they had, I think, about 12 of the organizations that applied for the grants to put the the principles in practice in their own communities and start having some community change in their own organization or through their own organization. So it's been a great success. We've been well received everywhere we've gone so far. So I hope in Richland Center we'll be well received.
I'm sure you will. Yes, absolutely. Coming up Monday, June 9th at the Community Center. You've had the Q&A a few times. Has there been a common question that's been posed to you and Tom?
Oh, yeah. There's been a few of those kind of common questions. One is, how did we get together to do this? Because Tom is, you know, from Madison. I'm from Richland Center. We worked together, we collaborated together on various projects for about 10 years. So we were kind of in that network. We created what was called Wisconsin Partners, which is a statewide association. So leaders of various associations get together and are part of Wisconsin Partners. And then Tom and I did a lot of projects together. Tom has worked in the city, but he's a farm boy at heart. He grew up in Door County on a dairy farm. I grew up in Richland County on a dairy farm. We had some common experience in the milk strikes of the 1960s, which most people won't remember, but a few that were in that industry certainly would. It was a difficult time, and we both learned some really significant lessons that launched us into wanting to see community change in positive ways, leave things better than when we came. So one of the big questions is why Tom and I are working together. The other issue in that is that Tom is more on the liberal side of the ideological and political spectrum. I'm more on the conservative side. So people will almost always ask, how do you guys get together? It seems like, you know, left, right can never even agree on anything. They don't even want to talk to each other. They just yell at each other. So we've got a few things that we laid down as principles for ourselves, things like we won't, just because we have a disagreement, we won't leave the table, so to speak. We won't leave the conversation. We'll keep working it through. We work on things that we can work on together. We don't get involved in electoral politics. You know, that's just kind of, it kind of sours the type of work that we're trying to do. So we're trying to bring people together to find commonalities that we can work on. And if you get involved in electoral politics, it's division, not commonalities. So we try and stay away from that. But that's one of the common questions is, why are you guys working together? Or how are you working together? I can't believe you're doing this. And so they're intrigued by it. It's kind of fun to talk about that.
Well, it's proof that it can happen, that's for sure. But I think the common goal for these groups that you're appearing, I mean, whether you're left or right or wherever, everybody wants to see their community do better, right?
Okay. If you bring it down to the lowest level, here's the deal, Phil. Everybody wants their family to do well. Everybody wants their community to do well. And if you start bringing it down to that level, instead of talking about national politics or national movements or international movements, let's just make it about what we can do ourselves. Sometimes we need a little help with things that we are trying to do, but what can people getting together, trying to make the best effort at good ideas becoming a reality, what can we do together to make that happen? And it is amazing what can be done when you decide on that, because, oh, this will be beneficial for my family or for me individually, for my community. And most people will say, yeah, I may not like you when it's time to vote, but right now we're friends in the same community. We're pulling together and we're going to work together. So that's kind of the principle behind it that seems to work across the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody wants their children and grandchildren to have, you know, a bright future and maybe even better than what we had it.
Yeah. And we find that most people are invested in their communities. It's like they're in living in the community they live in for a reason. It might be their job, might be that they grew up there, might be that they moved in and just like the environment in the community, but they're invested in their communities. And if you can tap into that desire, that's one of the best ways to get things moving forward with people. And what I found is that there's lots of people with good ideas about a community. They want good things to happen. They want their children to, you know, do well, or their grandchildren or whatever. But most people have an idea and they think, well, if I could only do this in the community, it would be a better place. But they really don't have a pathway to make that happen. And it's really when you get together with other people who have a common or shared vision and start to work together in that shared vision that you can make things happen together. So instead of good ideas just kind of dying and falling to the ground, when there's a pathway for that, that's really what the book is about. When there's a pathway for that to happen, people see this is the way I can make it work. Then they can see, oh, it's worth the investment in trying to make this change, and they're willing to do it.
A handbook for community change. I know one of the things you talk about in the book, Mike, is the change framework. Can you kind of give us a synopsis of that?
Sure. It almost looks like a formula if you just look at the framework, but the framework is kind of a process that we put down that has to do with the steps that are taken in order to make change happen. So sometimes people jump forward in the steps. Sometimes they don't even know there are steps. So it's change equals desire plus vision plus power. And I just want to emphasize the power thing here. The power has to do with the people, building relationships with people, and then taking action based on that. In other words, we can't really do very much by ourselves. But when we build relationships with people, who especially if they have common interests, but one of the principles we have is you build relationships before you need them so that they're there when you do have common interests. When those things are all in place, that equals the change that you're wanting to have happen. So that's what we call the framework. It's if people can learn how to plug into that. It's like, this is where I start with my idea, and this is how I get this thing going. And it's not just a matter of making the right formula work here, but the framework kind of gives people understanding of how they can make the good idea move along in the process, see if other people have the same idea, see if it can become a reality. So that's part of the book. It has the framework component to it that's makes it easy to remember. I think that's the kind of thing that I would say.
Mostly. When I first looked at it, I thought, uh-oh, there's going to be math involved. But there's not.
We started out calling it a formula instead of a framework.
Yeah, yeah.
And our team said, no, no, no. Anti-math people will not go for this.
Yep.
So we call it a framework, not a formula. And it's not really a formula. It isn't about math. I got to tell you the truth, I'm not great in math myself. There are lots of subjects I like, but math wasn't really one.
I hear you. You know, I'm sure people come to you and they say, Mike, I'm a follower. I'm not a leader. What do you say to that?
So it's a reality that some people tend to look to connect with others that are already doing things. And that's not a problem. But when you get together with other people, maybe there's a natural leader in there. But I also want to say this. There are lots of people who are maybe not natural leaders, but they're passionate about something. That's like the first characteristic in making things happen. There's a passion. We start in the framework calling it desire, but desire is a passion that's stirring in somebody. And what happens when somebody's got a passion, they either find other people to help them get where they want to go, or they learn how to get there themselves, and they, even though they may think, I'm not a leader, I'll never be a leader, they start becoming a leader as the passion starts to emerge. So there's two possible avenues in that. One is their own leadership emerges, and the other is that they connect with other people who are good at something they aren't good at. And of course, leadership has so many different prongs and dynamics to it, that you look for people that have got different gifts and talents and skills, and they can lead in their specific area. Somebody might be good at fundraising. Somebody else is good at public relations. Another person is good at finances. And you look for those kinds of people that can bring the necessary gifts that you need to make the effort work.
Yeah. Here in Richland Center, you know, we know a lot of people. You know, I was thinking when Tom was on with us last time by phone, and it might be a little more difficult in Madison. I mean, he has connections, but here in small town, we kind of know somebody that knows somebody, right?
Yes, although Tom, I have to say, Tom is one of the most connected people that I have ever met. any place in Wisconsin and many places in the Midwest, people, I should say, he knows. He knows them. So when we were looking for somebody to help us write the foreword, Tom says, well, I know this guy in Illinois who had the Asset-Based Community Development Organization, which is an international organization. I mean, it's known all over the world. He's written many books. Tom knew the guy personally. The guy wrote the foreword for our book. And then he passed away. So we got the last time he ever wrote anything is in our book, which is pretty amazing. So Tom is well-connected in Madison. And some of the places we go, we have a lot of connections, but some a few connections. The truth is, in Green Bay, we didn't have a lot of connections, but we each knew a few people there that wanted to help move things along. I'll just tell this little story. I was looking for getting some advice about things happening in Richland Center, and Tom said, I know this guy in Green Bay, and he knows the guy who's on the Packers board, and he runs this big organization called Title Town Tech, which is not a tech school, it's an investment entity. He said, I can get you hooked up if you want to talk to him. And so Tom's friend contacted his friend, who's on the Packer board and all this other thing, and we went up there and had a meeting. We drove up and had a meeting. That's kind of the way these things work. You look for the connections you've got and what connections those people have got, and you know, you build relationships and you get things going. Things can happen that way. It's kind of amazing the way that works.
One of the stories that you relay in the book, of course, the recent history of Richland Center is how the Aquatic Center all came to be, and that'll be a part of your presentation on the 9th as well. You've got a little tour planned, but that's an amazing story and a great example in your book, isn't it?
Right. So I want to say a little bit about the Aquatic Center. Let me just say the book, the way the book is laid out, each chapter we have kind of an introduction, like desire, D for desire. And we talk about what desire is and its passion that becomes reality. And then we tell a story that has that element, desire, in the story. One of the stories in the book is the Richland Center Aquatic Center. And for most people, you know, they go to the Aquatic Center, what they say, wow, this is an amazing venue. Richland Center is really blessed to have this. What a great thing in the community. But the story behind that is an amazing story, how it all came together. You know, it was over $5 million to build that. And the city of Richland Center didn't have $5 million sitting around to build it. They had to bond for what they did. So just one of the little backstories in that was Southwest Partners was involved in trying to make that a reality. So we've got these people, burgeoning numbers of people, getting together, envisioning one another, getting prints, all those kinds of things that were necessary to create the Aquatic Center. And by the way, it started out as just, let's replace the pool. Let's get a new pool in for the old pool. The Aquatic Center was not on the table to begin with. But as time developed, it was like we could dream big. We could have an Aquatic Center here. It would cost $5 million. And I will never forget going to the city council, and they're discussing this and kind of wringing their hands. Most of them thought it was a good idea to replace the pool. Some thought the Aquatic Center might be a little extravagant. A few thought Simon's might be good enough, just an indoor pool. So there was, you know, discussions about that. And after some amount of discussion, it came down to this. Some of the council members said, well, $5 million, we can't do that. We probably could bond for $3 million. We could come up with $3 million to replace. That's about what a regular old square pool would cost. So if you want this Aquatic Center, somehow the community is going to have to come up with the other $2 million. Now, for a small community like Richland Center, $2 million is quite a bit. So I'm sitting next to Mick Cosgrove, and suddenly Mick stands up in his seat, from his seat, and says, if the city will come up with $3 million, we will raise the other $2 million locally for the $5 million. I'm having a little bit of a heart flutter because I'm thinking, Mick, who all is doing. I know I'm in the gang because, you know, that's part of what we're looking at. But he knew that he had a team behind him that would go out and find that money. And the story is it took us less than 6 months to raise that $2 million and go to the city and say, we've got it. You know, it's time for you to vote, put your $3 million in, and we'll have that entity come into existence. So that's kind of the that's a little bit of the backstory. There is so much more to that backstory in the Aquatic Center. And we hope to go over that on June 9th when we have the little tour of the Aquatic Center before we have the actual book launch. And the story in the book tells quite a bit, although that doesn't even tell all the things that took place. I want to get back how the book is framed, though, and that's, okay, so we've got the story, and in the middle of each story, we have kind of a cliffhanger. We go through the first half of the story, and then it stops. Then there's a little cliffhanger, like, what's going to happen next? And in between the first half of the story and the second half of the story, we give instruction about what you go through to develop a shared vision, for example. How does that work? The lessons that we've learned. So there's a little bit of instruction. After the instruction, then there's the second part of the story that tells how things ended up. And each story is an engaging, interesting story. Some are from Wisconsin. Some are from other states. Some are national stories. We had a lady in New Zealand that wrote one of the stories. So kind of a broad range of stories. And then after the story is done, there's think and do activation. So things to think about, especially if you've already got an idea, how could that become a vision? How could it become a shared vision? And then do, what's the first step I take if I want to make this a vision and a shared vision? So that's the way the book is laid out. And that's why it works to actually plug in good ideas, things that people are passionate about, and make it happen with the framework in the book.
One of the things you hit on a little bit too, Mike, is resistance. And mm-hmm. certainly, I know there was some resistance when you were putting together the Aquatic Center thing, for example. But, you know, that's, you know, among the obstacles that you oftentimes have to overcome, right?
One thing I've learned in my life is no matter what you do, there's always going to be resistance. Sometimes I've been tempted to think that's just because people want to be curmudgeons. You know, they want to make life difficult. And I'm thinking, why do we have all these people that want to put obstacles in front of us? Most of the time, it's not just people wanting to put obstacles in front of us. They actually have a different view of how things would be better. So the Aquatic Center is a good example. There were a few people that thought it was going to raise taxes a lot in the city. They thought the Simon Center was enough. We didn't need any kind of outdoor facility. They thought, especially if they were large landowners, they thought it was going to cost them an inordinate amount of money. They thought we wouldn't be able to get lifeguards to staff the new Aquatic Center because it takes a number of lifeguards. And so there was lots of emotional speeches made at the city council to try, after they voted yes, to try and persuade them to rescind their vote and go no. So there was actually two groups. And there was the kind of the pro group and the resistance group. I want to say that all the negative things didn't come to pass, but the positive things did. There was very little tax increase. We did find enough lifeguards. Things just worked out amazingly well, and it became a drawing card that Aquatic Center draws from the region amazingly. In fact, I was in Mexico a few weeks ago. There's a family there that are missionary family, and they came and visited Richland Center a couple years ago after the Aquatic Center opened. They had their kids with them, and the kids went to the Aquatic Center. They enjoyed it. But when I was down in Mexico, this missionary was introducing me to this group of people that I was about to teach, and he said, this guy's from Richland Center. They're one of the best communities I've ever been in. They've got this Aquatic Center that should be in a place with 100,000 people, and they only have 5,000 people, and they've got this amazing Aquatic Center. So all the way down in Mexico, there's testimonials about the Aquatic Center and Richland Center. That just tells you how, you know, doing good things can really have an impact beyond the local area. Yeah.
I know one of the sponsors of this event is Southwest Partners. Would you like to say a few words about them?
Yeah, so Southwest Partners is the official sponsor of the event, and I'm in Southwest Partners. You know, full disclosure, I want to let everybody know that. I'm one of the executive team members of Southwest Partners. But for those whom some people probably have heard of Southwest Partners, some maybe not, but Southwest Partners has been around for a little over 10 years. We've done lots of different efforts in the community. We already mentioned the Aquatic Center raising the $2 million, and it wasn't just raising the $2 million, it was coordinating all the volunteers that were coming in to help. It was assisting with the park board, with the city council in making this all come together with the right people at the right time. So we've got people that are really passionate people. They're also capable people, and they're also connected people. So Southwest Partners is a 501c3, which means it's a nonprofit. It's an association. It's people that get together and want to make the community a better place. And they are amazing people. They're doing it without, there's no pay. In fact, usually there's not even any credit. Rarely do they get, does anybody say, oh, Southwest Partners, thank you for doing this. But their fingers are in so many things. I'll just give another example. Along the Pine River, we've got pretty good kayaking on the Pine River now. So there was an outfitter, Mark McCauley, was in that and helped clear it out. There's been other people that were friends of the Pine. But in order to really make the Pine a place where kayaking was beneficial, we needed those ports, those landings, you know, where you can drive your or paddle your kayak right onto those little landings. They're kind of plastic landings, and then you get out and you don't have to go in the mud and sink to your knees, which is what people had to do on the Pine before that. Well, it was Southwest Partners that got all those funds together and created that, all those ports along the Pine, from Rockbridge down to the Richland Primary School, all of those ports were put in by Southwest Partners. We don't take credit for that. The playground area over at the old community center, which is also called the Old Mill Pond and two or three other names that I can't remember, but most people will know it on Seminary Street. We put in all that playground equipment. The dog park, we put in the dog park. We're working on a skate park. We're working on a second slide for the Aquatic Center. The list goes on. I could just go down the list. But these are people that care about things, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to write the book. It's like, I know these things can happen. Good things can happen when people get together and want to see things happen. So Southwest Partners is a great organization. I'm just putting a little pitch in for them that it's not a special elite group. It's just people that care about the community, have the energy to go and do things that probably nobody else will do, but they will make a big difference. And when they do that, it is a big benefit for our community. I'm thinking about when the graduates at the high schools in the area and when UW-Richland was still going during COVID, and they couldn't have graduation ceremonies. It was Southwest Partners that got those big pictures of them and put them down on the fence at Crosscut Park, along with music, and people could drive by or walk by and see the graduates. We had six high schools represented in those graduation pictures, as well as UW-Richland. And COVID cash. I mean, I could just go on. I won't bore you with the whole list, but Southwest Partners is an amazing organization, and they are the ones that are sponsoring the book launch on June 9th. So they will, our executive team at least, will be there in force helping out with the book launch. They're excited about it because they've seen the framework in reality. They've seen it work. So they know that what's in the book isn't just theoretical. It's actually practical.
You have other contributors to the book. You mentioned there are some stories in there. How did you go about harnessing some of those?
Well, that's another good story, Phil. So I already mentioned the guy who wrote the foreword. So he's passed away, but he was the head of the ABCD organization called John McKnight. And that was a friend of Tom Moskaller's. So there's another guy, Jeff Yost, who runs a community foundation across the state of Nebraska. And Jeff Yost is coming to Wisconsin. He'll be in Richland Center in October. He's an amazing guy. He has transformed the state of Nebraska. We're hoping that somebody can grab a hold of that here in Wisconsin and do the same thing, because just every small community in Nebraska has been impacted by Jeff Yost's foundation. It's called the Nebraska Community Foundation. Anyway, Jeff Yost was another prominent guy who Tom originally knew him. I went and got to know him. We went to the same place in Columbia, the country of Columbia, and had some travels together. So we also had some storytellers. That one is a pastor up in Viroqua that I have known. She told about child care networking that she helped develop in the Viroqua Westby area. That's one of the stories in the book. This lady from New Zealand was involved in, she was from the United States. She was involved in creating the Disabilities Act in the U.S., you know, where you go in the parking lot and they got handicap places and the curb cuts. She was involved in all of those. So, you know, there's interesting stories in this book that came from just relationships we had with different people. There's a guy up in upper UP, upper Michigan, you know, and he was involved in transforming his community. And so we got a story from him there. So we've got a number of storytellers that give their interesting pointed stories that make the framework become reality as we, you know, we go through that. So,
yeah, it's an interesting read. We hope people will pick it up. What's the best way to get a hold of the book? I presume you'll have them there on the 9th.
We will have books on the 9th. So on June 9th, I'll just go over what the launch event is going to be. Mm-hmm. So on June 9th, which is a Monday, what we've got set up is at 5:30. Anybody wants to take a tour of the Aquatic Center and get the backstory, what took place. Besides what they're seeing, that's the opening day, by the way, of the Aquatic Center. So they're going to see kids playing in the water, and it'll probably be crowded. But we will talk about how it all came to be and who was involved and just the dynamics of making it a reality. So that'll be from 5:30 until 6 p.m. on June 9th. Then at 6 o'clock, we will have the author's presentation. So typically Tom and I will give a little discussion about the book, about why, about what we went through to make it happen, and where we've been so far. We'll tell a little bit of our own story. We typically have a story from the book being read. We will probably have the Aquatic Center story being read on the 9th. Somebody will read that, and then we have people go through a little exercise. What's an interest you have? And it's kind of a table exercise where they write down how they would work that into the framework of the book, you know? And so, and then we have a question and answer time. We have some refreshments there. So people will be able to interact with Tom and I, the authors. They'll be able to, if they want to, they can buy a book there and get the book signed. Or if they've already bought a book and they want to bring it with them, they can get the book signed. So we will have the books available there. And it's a little better deal right now. Anybody can go on Amazon, you know, the book, Amazon Books. And you can buy the book on Amazon. It's $16.95 on Amazon. At the book launch, we will have books for $15. So they'll be a little cheaper than Amazon. Plus, if they people want to, they can get an author's signature at the book launch. And usually it's at the end we have a time of interaction, meeting people. In the launches we had in Madison, there were several authors from Madison that were there at our book launches in Madison. And so I got to meet and interact with authors from other books in Madison. That was kind of an interesting dynamic. So I know there's other authors in Richland Center, Richland County. I want to invite them to come and let us know what you've got and what you're doing. It would be great to have them in attendance.
Do you have any workshops planned for the area?
The next, yeah. So We don't have one in Southwest Wisconsin. The next workshop we have is in Wausau, and that's coming up in June. And we're negotiating with a couple other places for workshops right now. I think we'll probably end up doing a workshop in Madison. I wouldn't mind doing one in Southwest Wisconsin. In fact, I'd like to do one in Southwest Wisconsin. Workshops, we tend to draw more people and have more time where we kind of take people through the process of how this works, the important lessons they need to learn, how you make these relational connections that you need in order to make things happen. So, you know, these workshops are great, and I'll try and get one going in Southwest Wisconsin, but we don't have one planned yet. When Jeff Yost from the Nebraska Foundation comes in, he's going to do some workshops about his foundation, and we're also going to talk about the book. But he'll be in Viroqua, he'll be in Richland Center, Monroe. We've got him going, I think he's in Milwaukee and Green Bay and Chippewa Falls. We got him all over the place. So that's going to happen in October. Yeah.
What would be interesting, book two, pulling together part two, would be some stories about, you know, the results, like people went out and made things happen. And, you know, I think that'd be a great follow-up book, Mike.
We will take that into advisement, Phil, on book two. I do want to say sometimes stories don't work out. In other words, we put our best effort at and it failed. And I think you can learn as much or more out of those times when you work hard and you think it's going to happen and somebody gets in the way. It turns out the resistance is too much. They get in the way and you don't make it happen. But those are great learning lessons. But that would be a good book, too. I'll have to talk to Tom about that. We'll take your suggestion to heart and see if that can go that way.
Sure. I don't even need a commission if, you know, you do that. So. Well, we hope a lot of people will come out on June 9th, Monday, 5:30 to 7:30, the Richland Center Community Center. Mike, anything else you'd like to add this
morning?
Well,
I know this is not all that personal, but I just want to make a personal invitation to people. Come to the launch event. It would be great to connect with you, whether I know you or not, or you know Tom or not. And there's actually quite a few people in the area that know Tom. So come and, you know, let's talk a little bit. Maybe you got some ideas you want to pitch, or just get to know each other a little bit better. I just want to make that invitation. Come and check us out June 9th, Monday, 5:30 for the tour, 6:00 for the author's presentation.
Good to see you again, Mike.
Thank you, Phil. It's good to see you, too. Appreciate it very much.
Mike Brennan, you're joining us. The book is Pulling Together, a Handbook for Community Change.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Saxonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first. Choice for better health.
April showers bring May pollen season. Stock up on allergy relief all month long. Community pharmacy at the Richland Hospital has 25% off over-the-counter antihistamines, topical creams, and bug sprays. Not sure which medication will work best for you? Ask head pharmacist, Dr. Madeline Oy.
Get your dirt work done right with Muller & Sons Excavating. From drainage ditches to ATV trails, commercial sites to driveways, and residential areas to land clearing, we've got you covered. Now serving Ithaca, call us at 608-415-7528 and schedule your project today at Muller & Sons Excavating.
Howdy, folks. The 66th Wisconsin High School Rodeo State Finals are riding into the Richland County Fairgrounds June 13th, 14th, and 15th. Tickets are on sale now through June 13th at Creative Layers, 142 South Central Avenue in Richland Center. Don't miss June Dairy Days and the Rodeo Parade Saturday morning at 10:30, plus Cowboy Church Sunday at 8:30. For more information, call Kenda at 475-1886. Saddle up! The finals are coming, and Richland Center's ready to rodeo. Yeehaw! The Wisconsin Supper Club tradition has found new life at Kickapoo Creekside. From mouthwatering steaks and fresh seafood to a large salad bar and perfectly crafted old fashions, Kickapoo Creekside offers a truly exceptional dining experience. Choose from the menu or indulge in the chef's daily special. Dine inside or enjoy your meal outside in the fresh air. Visit Kickapoo Creekside at 827 West Kickapoo Street in Reedstown. Open Wednesdays through Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays starting at 11. Come and taste the tradition.
The best words to hear at the TSA security checkpoint? You're good to go. All it takes is a little preparation. Get to the airport early, bring a carry-on bag that fits in the overhead, and have an acceptable ID. Not all state-issued IDs will cut it. Check out tsa.gov/ID and see which TSA acceptable IDs make the grade, like a real ID or passport.
Before you jet, do a little prep, and you're good to go. Check out tsa.gov/ID or the MyTSA app.
This month is Women's Health Month, and in to join us from the Richland Hospital today is nurse practitioner Allison Ewing. Allison, good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you in here. Why is it an important month in your eyes?
So there are a number of reasons why Women's Health Month is important. Primarily, a big thing that we focus on during Women's Health Month is preventative care screenings. So mammograms, pap smears, bone density screening, all those kinds of things that become increasingly important as we age.
Certainly things that we don't think about, though, are things such as heart health, right?
Yes.
That comes into play as well?
Yep, that's also important as well. So basically, the recommendation is that ages 18 to 39, people come into the clinic to see their regular provider, primary care provider, every 1 to 3 years. After age 40, we like people to come in annually. And at those checks, we do monitor, you know, blood pressure. We usually do blood screenings such as cholesterol checks, checking for diabetes, screening for thyroid disorders. And then, of course, the other preventative care things that I mentioned earlier with like mammogram screening, pap smear, bone density screening.
Very important for mental health, too, I'm sure, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Usually once a year we do touch on mental health and kind of do a screening on where things are in terms of any signs of anxiety or depression. Absolutely.
Does the Richland Hospital offer different classes and different things like that, that you can be a part of to learn a little bit more?
So I think touching base with your primary care provider would be the best thing, because they might have, you know, classes that would be most beneficial for you. As far as any general classes, they do offer things like Senior Life Solutions, which offers mental health support for people on Medicare generally. And then they have some other resources in the community. I'm not sure about any particular classes that they offer as of right now.
Just check with your primary caregiver, right?
Yep.
Exactly. So are there some things that you'd like to focus on today that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, I think maybe just some things on some of the screening recommendations. So it used to be they started pap smears by age 18, and we did them every year. Now, primarily that's looking for HPV, which can contribute to certain types of cervical cancer. In recent years, they found that actually going longer periods, sometimes some of that would clear on its own. So they do recommend now we start screening everyone at age 21. So that's a change from previously when it was age 18. And then there's kind of an algorithm that we follow. If, you know, the pap smear is normal and the HPV is negative, then we generally do every 3 years until age 35, and then it goes to every 5 years. However, if one of those things would come back worrisome, sometimes we do monitor it annually. So again, just kind of making sure you get in to start those screenings, definitely at age 21, and then following up on the every 3 year, every year, every 5 year, per the recommendation of your regular provider.
What about family history? Does that come into play?
Absolutely. So family history can come into play, especially with breast cancer. Specifically, we usually start screening women at age 40. However, you know, in recent years, we are seeing people develop breast cancer at an earlier age. So, and maybe it's just because there's better detection. It's hard to say as far as that. But the recommendation is if you have a family history, a lot of times they'll start screening you 10 years prior to when your family member had breast cancer. So that is an important thing. Definitely something to talk to your primary care provider about if you do have that family history. Same with colon cancer screening. A lot of times if there's a family history, we adjust those recommendations as well.
I know for colon cancer screening, and in fact, we've talked about that in this program here this year.
Yep.
Is it the same for men and women, Allison?
Yes, that is pretty much the same.
Yep. The recommendations
yep,
for when you
should recommendations.
Start?
Yep, same recommendations. Yep. It used to be age 50, and now a lot of times they're leaning towards age 45, unless there's a family history or concerns.
Uh-huh. So that's another thing to look at.
Yeah.
Another thing I'm sure you encourage is just to get up and do a little moving and grooving, right? Moving the body around a little bit.
Absolutely. The recommendation is generally that we get 30 minutes of exercise 5 times a week. But I think especially for women, because they can be more prone to osteoporosis, and particularly Caucasian women, any strength training exercise you do will help strengthen your bones. So, of course, like getting adequate calcium, vitamin D is important, but doing strength training exercises, so anything that incorporates weights, yoga, tai chi, those kinds of things can also be beneficial, will just help with that bone strengthening and help prevent fractures down the road. And as we know, fractures, especially as we age, could have increased complications, problems, especially when it turns into like a hip fracture or something significant like that. So prevention is always kind of the best choice.
Do we see a higher amount of cancers in our area, in women particularly?
I don't know as far as in our area versus other areas, but I do know, like, statistically, I was actually reading some statistics before I came that about breast cancer, we are seeing it diagnosed kind of younger and younger. It's becoming increasingly common for women in their 50s to get breast cancer, whereas we used to not find it until they were older. But again, it's hard to say, is that because we're screening earlier now, so we're just catching it sooner, which is beneficial, and a lot of times people have a better outcome when we're catching it earlier. But as far as if we have a higher incidence than those around us, I'm not totally sure on that.
Mm-hmm. Any opinion on why, you know, those cancers develop at a younger age these days?
So it's hard to say, but again, it might just be because we're screening, so we're finding it younger. Mm-hmm. Our screenings are becoming better, so maybe we're more easily able to detect it. But certainly, you know, I'm not even sure on that, to be honest with you, but basically we are seeing it happen earlier, and it's hard to say if there are things in our environment that we're being exposed to that could be contributing. Family history. They are also learning a lot more about like the Human Genome Project. So a lot of times now with people who have a high risk for some of these cancers, they can do genetic screenings. Now, we certainly don't know everything about the Human Genome Project, so certainly there could be genes that we don't even know about that could contribute to cancer. But it used to be we only knew about BRCA 1 and 2 to predispose individuals to breast cancer, for example. But now, at least last I checked, I believe there was like 14 or 16 genes that they could screen for that could not only predispose you to breast cancer, but ovarian, colon, pancreatic. So that's been really interesting, and hopefully they continue to, you know, we'll continue to see developments on that with time.
We talked about family history, Allison, but is it important to talk to your mom or your grandma if you're able to?
Yes.
About the family tree?
Absolutely. That's definitely one of the things that we would recommend when people are getting ready to come in for their annual wellness, to kind of have a list. If you have questions or concerns, don't hesitate to write those down in advance so you don't forget about them when you're there. Bringing a list of any medications or supplements you're on, and then if you can, talking to your family about any family history, especially parents, siblings, and children. If one of them have something that's been going on, it's super important to bring that up to your primary care provider in case it could be something genetic that we need to look more into or do screenings for.
On the other hand, sometimes you find somebody that has an issue, cancer shows up or whatever, and they have no family history.
Absolutely.
There's not a rhyme or reason sometimes.
Right. Sometimes there isn't. Absolutely. So that's why they do the early prevention for everyone for a lot of these things. But you're right in that sometimes you can have a clean family history, no history of it, and still develop something.
What about diet? Do you get into that, nutrition and those kind of things?
Absolutely. So we have kind of what we call the Get Fit program at the Richland Hospital. And actually, Dr. Dickman and myself kind of head that up. So that is especially important for women because as we age, women just have more estrogen. So that encourages fat storage. Men tend to have a higher muscle mass, which helps them burn more calories even at rest. So especially as women age and enter menopause, estrogen levels drop and muscle mass tends to decrease, which results kind of in a lower metabolism. So there are lots of things that we can do to help women with weight loss or doing testing if there are concerns for hormone issues or even perimenopausal symptoms that might go along with entering menopause. A lot of times people who have the best success with losing weight are focusing not only on like lifestyle changes, diet, exercise, but we do have some medications that can be used to kind of kickstart metabolism, and going in to see your primary care provider would definitely be a good way to find out if that would be an option for you. Also, we have nutritionists up at the hospital who will do consults and kind of help people with that dietary component. We talk about it a lot in the clinic. So yes, weight can play a big role, especially for women as we age. It just becomes harder to lose weight because that muscle mass decreases. So that's another thing that can always be brought up with your primary care provider. We're happy to see you for that anytime.
As we always say, it's nice to set lofty goals, but probably more realistic to say, okay, yes, I'm just going to do better, eat better, exercise, and then see what happens, right?
Yes, absolutely. And sometimes setting those lofty goals becomes very discouraging. Sometimes I'll have patients set a goal of like, I want to exercise every day. And I always try to encourage, you know, set a small goal at first because you can always go up from there. But when you set it so high, you know, life gets in the way and it can be hard to meet that. So absolutely, like setting those small realistic goals that are attainable are excellent. And you're right in that it's not even so much about the number on the scale. Sometimes I'll have people with a very specific weight that they want to be, but really it's more about like how you feel in your own skin, the activities that you can, like, can you do the activities you want to enjoy? Are you able to like splurge once in a while still maintaining that weight without fighting, like exercising 3 hours a day to maintain that?
What about good sleep? Because I know as a guy, that's one of the things that kind of changed my life when I figured out what was going on and, you know, did the sleep study and all that stuff. But I'm sure it holds true for women too, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely. Sleep is so important. Sleep can impact so many things. As you probably know, when you're not sleeping well, everything seems more stressful and worse. Like problems just seem bigger. So absolutely, if you're not sleeping well, there's lots of things we can do in terms of like screening for sleep apnea. A lot of times people with underlying like anxiety or depression might be struggling with sleep, restless leg syndrome, chronic pain. So there's a lot of things that we can do to kind of treat those underlying conditions and help with sleep.
You said screening, and I thought of screens too. Screen time is probably an important thing to kind of monitor, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, we monitor that a lot, I would say, especially with the younger generations. And that was so much easier to control before so much started to be done homework in schools on tablets, computers, devices. So really, that's a big thing we talk about, especially with children at their annual wellness exam, is really trying to limit to that screen time. The recommendation is for school-age kids is no more than 2 hours a day, which adds up quickly, mm-hmm. you know, even if you consider TV, computer, any time you spend on your phone. So it's nice that the phones give us those weekly reports. But yeah, there's a lot that parents can do, though, in terms of setting parental controls that will control that a little bit and shut the phone off at a certain time from any type of screen time. I'm sure you can still call. But yeah.
Women through the decades, too. I think about my own dear mother, and she had me, and it was 50 years before she went back to the doctor. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And we finally got her to go.
Yes.
But I think that was more common back then, wasn't it?
Yes. And I think women in general, especially moms, are spending so much time taking care of everyone around them that they aren't really always taking care of themselves. And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, they say on an airplane, you should put your oxygen mask on before you put anyone else's on, because you're not going to be any good to anyone if you're not here. You know, so definitely encouraging women to go in and get those annual exams done, those screening test done, just to make sure that we're keeping them in their best health so they can continue to take care of their families.
It's important this month, Allison, but it's important the year round, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add today about our conversation?
No, I think the one thing I would just add is that we, in the past, used to only do screening mammography here at the hospital. So that meant that if maybe they didn't get enough images, if there was a concern, they would have to go on somewhere else, oftentimes UW Breast Center or wherever insurance covered, to do a diagnostic mammogram to get additional images. We actually are capable now to do all of that at the Richland Hospital. So we do screening mammograms Monday through Friday. If there's something abnormal, we can bring the patient back in for what we call a diagnostic mammogram, which is just getting more images. We do breast ultrasounds here. Generally, if that's the case, they speak to the radiologist that day that they are here for those appointments, so they're getting some answers. And then we coordinate care and set up any follow-up that they might need regarding that.
Are those better than they used to be?
It is still somewhat uncomfortable, but I do think that's gotten a lot better. And we now have like the 3D mammograms, so imaging is just better than it used to be. Absolutely.
Yeah, start with your primary, right?
Yes, start with your primary care provider, and they know your history and your background, and they'll be able to kind of give you specifics about where you should go and what you should do as far as preventative care screenings and treatment of any health problems you have currently.
That's a great place to start. Sometimes places like WebMD and things like that can get you a little bit concerned.
It's tempting.
It is tempting. I know that.
Yes, but absolutely. Just go into the clinic anytime you have a concern. We're happy to see you, listen to you, and kind of go from there.
Great. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for your expertise today.
Yes. Thank you so much.
You bet. Allison Ewing joining us here, nurse practitioner with the Richland Hospital. So we talk about an important topic, Women's Health Month here during the month of May.
Got stumps? Call Titus Osborne today for a free estimate. With over 15 years of professional stump grinding and removal experience, Titus is insured and ready to handle your project. Don't let those stumps linger. Get the removal scheduled. Customer satisfaction is a must, and Titus is committed to providing fast, reliable, no-hassle service. Call 608-604-7757 now for all your stump removal needs. 604-7757. Titus Osborne, your go-to expert for stump removal.
Join the legacy at Scott's Industries, a proud family-owned business for 75 years. They're expanding and looking for dedicated team members. Enjoy competitive wages, benefits, and a $3 per hour night shift bonus. No experience necessary, just